on the phone with us now. Paul Kersey, Labor Policy Analyst, Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Good morning, Paul. How are you this morning?
Good morning. How are you doing today?
Not too bad. Where are you this morning?
I'm at the offices in fabulous downtown Midland.
How is Midland today? What's the weather like down there for you guys?
Pleasant so far. I mean, sun's out, birds are singing, sky is blue. And I'm indoors. That's
there you go.
I
know. I felt that yesterday in Travers. It was like 79 degrees and sunny, and I just could not force myself to go home and sit in my home office. So I wandered around downtown Traverse City, snuck in, maybe had an adult beverage or two. It was just too nice. Springs, did you guys get hit at all with any of the snow that we got pounded with about 10 days ago?
Don't think so. We certainly didn't get pounded with snow. We might have picked up an inch or two.
Yeah, boy, it was. People up here are still talking about that, and it was just wild. But it's also wild to think that much of the state went unscathed, and we here in the northern lower, at least northwest Michigan, really just still talking about what it was like to lose power for as long as we did.
Well, the joys of lake effect snow, what can you say?
Oh, man, I tell you. And you know, we knew we were going to get hit because we had dodged the bullet pretty much all winter long. So anyway, All right, let's talk about this referendum that a group wants to put on the ballot that would, in effect, correct me if I'm wrong, but in effect, do away with right to work, make that illegal. Am I right, wrong, somewhere in between?
Probably right. There's a group called Protect Our Jobs that wants to write collective bargaining as part of the state constitution. And the way they've done it, it's all take and no give. There's no limits that the state legislature can put on collective bargaining, but all the reforms that they've put in over the last few years, the emergency manager rules, reforms to healthcare benefits, and reforms to teacher pensions, all those go out the window. It's really a very one-sided deal. It's a union power grab that's liable to cost taxpayers billions of dollars.
Now, what is this group, Protect Our Jobs? What do we know about this group?
Primarily, it appears to be a union group. I know that UAW is very active in this thing, and other unions. This is an amendment for government employee unions.
And what in fact they want to do is just put in collective bargaining the process permanently with the referendum and make it part of what happens instead of perhaps weakening it or doing it away with it. Now, I know the folks on the union side of the state say what Republicans or conservatives in the state are trying to do is waging a war on the middle class. How do you react to something like that?
Well, when they settle back down and look at what's actually going on in the state, they're trying to preserve the middle class, and they're trying to do that by placing some limits on the expense that government represents for taxpayers. Right now, we've got a collective bargaining system that is driving up costs and weakening the effectiveness of everything that government does. Give you one example. Teacher tenure reform. That's one of the things that the legislature passed through, and what you have is a system that protected underperforming teachers, the weak performing teachers, guaranteed that they would not be made it more difficult to get to identify them and let go of them and hold on to the better teachers. But that reform will be thrown out the window if this amendment gets passed through. What this amendment does is it locks in place a collective bargaining system that has worked badly for taxpayers throughout the state. It eliminates the legislature's ability to put any limits on where collective bargaining can go, any limits on how much the process can cost taxpayers. We've got cities that are pushing bankruptcy. The largest city in the state is approaching bankruptcy, and this amendment would say the legislature cannot go into collective bargaining agreements and change those to make it easier for the city to recover.
Now, one of the beefs about public unions as opposed to private sector unions is that union representatives for public unions pretty much feel like, well, we can ask for whatever we want because, frankly, we're just going to go to the taxpayers and get the money anyway. So there isn't really a market check and balance there. Would that be a fair thing to say?
That's exactly right. And this amendment, again, would lock that into place. There is, it would lock collective bargaining for government employees in place. The legislature would not be able to put any limits on there to protect taxpayers, but unions could demand as much as they want. And the hilarious thing is that it does allow the legislature to add to the cost of collective bargaining and add to the benefits that are available to government employees through this process. Government employee salaries make up 80% of the cost of government, up to 80% of the cost of government. So you cannot get a government budget under control without addressing employee costs. It just cannot be done. And this amendment would put all that beyond reach.
Paul Kersey on the phone with us this morning, Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Wouldn't the answer, though, on the other side of the coin, from the government standpoint, the governor's standpoint, would be to drastically then reduce the size of the workforce? If collective bargaining stays in place and unions can really crack the whip on this, why wouldn't the governor just say, okay, you know what we're going to do? We're going to drastically reduce the number of people we employ.
You know, that's one way to go about it, but but here's the thing. We actually, Mackinac Center is not anti-government, and then that we are anti-big government, we're anti-unnecessarily expensive government, but we understand that you do need to have a government. You do need to have certain things that are done. You do need a police department. You do need a fire department. You do need some kind of education put in place. You do need some protections put in place, a safety net for the poor. So what you are doing there is forcing people into a position where we are going to make government unnecessarily expensive, then you do without a government. That only works up to a point. And there's only so much, there's a lot of fat and there's a lot of gristle in the government, but at some point you actually do run into cutting services that people actually do need and actually do have a right to expect from their government to provide for them. So that only gets you so far.
What do you suppose the chances are this referendum gets enough signatures and gets put on the ballot?
You know, it's hard to say. I think if the unions are serious about this, then odds are about 99% that they will get the signatures they need. Here's the thing. This is a huge risk for them. They are going to be putting a pretty radical initiative on the ballot. Right to work, at least in principle, actually does have the support of a lot of Michiganders, a majority, depending on just how you want to phrase the question. This thing could lose. And if they were to lose it, it would probably be seen by a lot of people as a green light to go ahead with right to work. The unions would be gambling with this thing if they did put it on the ballot, and they may at some point decide we don't want to push things this far. That would be the thing that would keep it off the ballot, though. If the unions really want to go ahead with it, it will be there.
You bring up an interesting point because. Does it, in fact, you think, fast-track right to work if it fails in November? Because that might be a signal politically that the state is ready for right to work.
Well, it's pretty clear that the unions intend for this thing to forestall right to work. And that's almost certainly how the courts would interpret it. You know, you could make an argument. Well, it doesn't specifically say right to work, but I think that's what it would mean because again, the legislature is not allowed to place any limits on collective bargaining, and right to work is typically seen in those terms. So this is, among other things, going to be a referendum on right to work, but it's really framed in the worst possible way because not only does it forestall right to work, it also kills off a lot of very important and very valuable reforms that are supposed that that were were designed and had have had some success in making government less expensive and more effective.
Paul Kersey, labor policy analyst from the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, on the telephone with us this morning. What do you make of the situation going on in Detroit right at the moment? I guess the mayor yesterday, speaking to a group, basically says he doesn't like the governor's latest idea and says he was not elected as a mayor to answer to the governor. Where do you see the Detroit situation going?
You know, it's really hard to say. I think that, you know, reasonable people can differ about what is the best way to deal with cities that are close to bankruptcy. But one of the things that you will see if you look at Detroit very closely is that they have really, really lousy labor relations. A lot of collective bargaining agreements that are in place that have been around for 10, 15 years and haven't been rewritten to account for the fact that the city's lost close to half its population. And that adds to the expense of government, makes it harder for the city to get its fiscal house in order. And at the same time, the government employee unions are a powerhouse in the city itself. And all that has had the effect of undermining democracy and making the city close to ungovernable. If the mayor and the governor cannot agree on an emergency financial manager or some other kind of intervention where a professional team is going to be able to come in and provide some guidance, then the next step really is going to be to offer some relief from the government employee bargaining process. Let the city get those contracts rewritten and redone so that there's something affordable there, and go forward from that.
Yeah, relief would have to come somewhere. End of the day, it has to come from somewhere, right?
Yeah. And the thing about it is, Detroit probably is the perfect example of why you can't actually cut government too far. There actually is a point that you can't cut it, and you actually have to look at are we getting realistic wages? Are we paying realistic wages and benefits to our employees? You have to actually consider that, because the city is actually looking at pretty drastic cuts to police and fire, and the city is suffering from alarmingly high crime rates. At some point, you have to ask, instead of saying how few police can we get away with, you have to ask, can we provide police at a reasonable cost that our taxpayers can handle? And that's something that really needs to be done in Detroit, if anywhere.
What's the downside of Detroit going bankrupt?
What's the downside of Detroit going bankrupt? First of all, the emergency manager law is in place, and up to now, at least, it's still in effect. And even with PA4 repealed, there's still an emergency financial manager law in place. So a bankruptcy is not likely to happen in
all
Detroit.
Right.
The most likely course of action, if things break down and the mayor and the governor cannot come to some sort of agreement, and the city council can't come into some kind of agreement, the most likely result is the appointment of an emergency manager. The only question is whether that emergency manager is going to have the ability to set aside contracts or not. The city council and the mayor ultimately are going to be pushed out the door. That's the other thing about this amendment that people need to understand. The unions have made a great deal have spoken at great length about the importance of democracy, of retaining elected officials. None of the amendments that they've proposed, and this certainly falls in that category, none of the amendments that they proposed would actually restore democratic self-government, where it's been, where emergency managers have been appointed. What they do is they restore union prerogatives. So it's really about the unions, and it isn't about a whole lot else with these people.
Yeah, and the unions, correct me if I'm wrong, and I believe I have the stat correct, over the last 10 years in Michigan, have lost 20% of their force. I mean, they've been drastically reduced.
I don't know about the specific numbers. I'd have to look those up, but that's certainly in range. They have been losing members, especially in outside of government. They have been losing members since the 80s.
Paul Kersey on the phone with us, Mackinac Center for Public Policy. Mackinac.org is where you can find a lot of his work, including Do Government Unions Really Need all that money. Paul, thank you very much. Where else can we find you on the World Wide Web?
Mackinac.org is the place.
Right.
Check it out. We've got an article on other things that the legislature has done recently that really do deserve kudos. So thank you very much for the mention there.
Paul, we appreciate your time. Good stuff as usual.
Okay, bye.
All right, folks, stay with us. Got a break, come back, talk about a few other things, wrap up this first hour still to come. Pet House Calls at 11:30 with our very good friend, Dr. Eric Peck from Northern Michigan Veterinary Hospital. We'll be right back.